8:13 Thursday morning, August 7th. Tommy Tucker joined now by Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. How you doing, Alex?
Doing really well here in Cleveland. How you been?
I'm okay. You know, I just realized today would have been my dad's 99th birthday and my parents' anniversary. I didn't realize that on August 7th. But anyway, let's talk about this T-App data breach. I don't think my parents meant on an app. That was way back in the day. So tell me what the T-App was and then what happened, or is, I guess.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, there's a number of kind of forums out there, whether they're on social media or other places, where people share information about other people. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Facebook has a lot of these kind of, are we dating the same person, where people share, you know, photos and ask if anybody knows this person or, you know, early on in the relationship or something like that. And the T-App really is something that kind of takes that but puts it in app form and also allows other things like performing background checks on certain people or, you know, having other conversations. So people are on there, you know, sharing a lot of information about other people.
So how do you go about, let me go back to the to the anatomy of an app. So somebody has an idea to say, you know what, let's create this application, this program that will allow women to go on and put information on about men they've dated and then rate them? Or is that what was going on here or not?
To some degree, but it really was more about, I don't know if it was necessarily rating. Like we kind of think of some of those sites and, you know, the old days that you rated.
Let me take that back. I don't mean rate as much as compare notes on people. Would that be better?
That's more correct, yes, absolutely, okay. And really people to do research on other people. Mm-hmm. And again, these types of forums, really, they proliferated, but this was in an app form. And some people are familiar with the apps on your phone. It's a little bit different than a website, mm-hmm. but think of it as a website that's kind of packaged and put on your device. I know that's a really simplistic explanation, but that's kind of how to think of it.
And to be clear, I was kidding around about my parents, but it's not a dating app. It was a dating safety app, right?
Correct. So it wouldn't be somewhere where you would go and meet somebody or a potential partner or anything like that. It was to discuss, you know, partners. Like think of it like some of these sites or apps where people talk about an employer, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just say you're applying to go work at a certain grocery store. So you go on this forum and other people will talk about the experience of working there, what the benefits are like, what challenges might be, what the bosses are like. Kind of like that, except for individuals, right? So, hey, I met this person. You know, we went on a date, you seem kind of off. Does anybody know them? You know, have you been on a date with them? Can you give me information? Things like that.
So this was for women as it relates to men to compare notes to say, hey, what's the story on this guy? Accurate?
I would say that generally describes it pretty well.
Is there an equivalent app for men for women or not that you know of?
There are. Okay. So really, there's an app for anything. It's almost That's impossible true. For mm-hmm. there to not be an app about something. But, you know, certainly these things exist, you know, for all genders and, you know, things like that. I will tell you, I am very, very happy every single day for a lot of reasons that I'm married and happily so and not out in the dating market because it seems pretty wild these days.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is wild. So these I just want to do a little Internet 101 here. So the people that came up with this T-App, and it says it surged at the top of the free iOS App Store listings. They make their money. How? This is not a nonprofit thing, right? How do the people that created this app, why did they do it?
So sometimes, you know, apps make money through advertising, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where they will serve ads. But others make you know, money through subscriptions or selling certain services. And my understanding is that, you know, with this, there were kind of options where you could pay for kind of background check functions and some other things like that. Okay. So with any app, there are a lot of different ways to make money, you know, some more obvious than others, you know, some more direct than others. You know, on anything on your phone, you know, you download a free game app. It'll oftentimes, you know, have things that you can buy within the app or, you know, will serve videos. So if you're playing a game, you can get extra gems or coins or something for watching a video. So there really are multiple ways that they'll make money, you know, with any of these apps.
So what happened with the hacking of this?
So what it looks like is that, you know, some of the information in files were stored insecurely. You know, per the company, you know, these were files that were from users that had signed up over a year ago, and that they hadn't moved these files to kind of their new secure system. And I haven't passed in that verified yet. But what's important to note is whenever you go and kind of share information somewhere, whether it's with a hospital or an application or what is it, what have you, it's that data is not necessarily stored by that organization, right? They use third-party services, they host it somewhere, and so on and so forth. And so your data is really only as secure as the place where it's stored. And in this case, what's concerning, I think, too, aside from just the personal nature of some of this information, is that it's information that was, told to people that signed up that it would be deleted, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen multiple cases over the years where data that should have been deleted was not, and then was breached at a later date. So it's just a really good kind of, refresher for people to think about where you're sharing your data. The other piece that really stands out with this one is, we've talked about it before, right? None of us want our credit card number stolen or our driver's license. But, you can kind of recover from that. There are things that you can do. But if your personal messages, things that are personal about you are disclosed, that's a much different thing. I always like to ask people, would you rather lose your credit card or your bank data, or would you rather have someone have access to every text message you've sent in the past 10 years? Mm. And everyone's going to say it's the first one, right? Because if you go to Thanksgiving dinner, no one's embarrassed that their credit card number was stolen, but they might be very embarrassed or upset by the contents of their messages.
Like the text that was sent at the table at, man, does this dressing suck, right? That one sibling sent to the other, talking about mom's dressing. Man, does this suck. Anyway, right. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, because I think the danger here, as I understand this, about this T-Data breach, and I don't know what 4chan is. I don't know if that's part of the dark web or not. I don't know, but it just seems as though that women that were on this app were put in a position where now maybe they said bad things about men and their identities have been revealed, as well as their maybe addresses in some cases, which could be potentially dangerous. We'll continue. We come back. Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Second. And a big question, too, when it comes to these apps is, again, like Alex said, there's an app for everything. And you, for whatever reason, get all involved and you put your information in there, but you don't really know who's on the other side of it and who the custodian of that is. Are there any safeguards? 820 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about this T-App data breach where women use this app to compare men, or at least, what's the word? I guess that would be it, right? Evaluate, compare would be good. What do we say? What word do we agree on, Alex?
Probably share notes, right?
Share notes. Okay, share notes. So what information did they have to put in? And that comes to what kind of information is out there? And then I talked about 4chan being the dark web, but I don't guess it is, right? I don't even know what the dark web is.
No, so a couple things. So generally when you signed up for this app, you had to verify that you were in fact a woman, right? Mm-hmm. And so they did that through either taking a selfie or kind of sharing your driver's license. Mm-hmm. And so those selfies and some cases of the driver's license, were leaked and were out there. As far as what the dark web is, the short answer is it's basically just the internet, but you need a specific browser to access it, to access the different sites. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little bit different that way.
And where do you get that? From a guy in an alley or what?
Nope. You can go download it right now in their legitimate sources. Okay. And, when you think about it, there's a number of reasons, I think, why people, legitimate reasons why people use it and for privacy and things like that. But it's very accessible. If anybody does a Google search, you could be browsing the dark web in about a minute.
So the danger with this T-App is it was breached. Men that could look and find things could be posted on 4chan, for example, about men or from T that were not complimentary about them, perhaps, and then they could then find out who posted it and the address of the person that posted it. Is that what I'm thinking here?
That's certainly one of the issues. So, if your driver's license is out there, that's going to have your address on it, of course. People can kind of see what you may have posted or shared about, other people. And then any selfie, people can usually identify you from that in multiple ways. So, again, I think the biggest issue here is just to think about how much data is out there about us. And, and it's not just you know, these random apps or these kind of small new apps that have breaches. You see it with, you know, major companies, you know, hotel chains. You see it with the government and so on and so forth.
So
and
when
so
it,
there's just
let me just jump in for a minute with the time we have left. So when it comes to an app, what kind of safeguards are there? If somebody's going to download an app like this and they ask for your information, who do you know is on the other end of this? And is there any safeguard in place to make sure that the person on the other end of the app is protecting the information that you're putting in as much as they can protect it? Because as you just mentioned, there have been God knows how many breaches already.
So the short answer is sort of, I guess. It's a tough thing to answer quickly, but you know, when you think about kind of the regulatory environment, you know, if you sell an unsafe car, they have a recall, right? They bring it back, or there are certain things. But with apps, there really isn't that kind of standard. There's a number of kind of voluntary things out there. There's certain laws around privacy and all that. But all you have to do is really pick up a newspaper, or maybe that's an archaic saying, but just read the news, and you'll see that, you know, even these large name brand, you know, companies have breaches. And so we need to be doing a lot more, you know, to prevent these.
Alex, what would you advise people when it comes to internet safety or address or driver's license number, something like that? I don't know. Tell me.
Well, the challenge is that a lot of places you have to share that information, right? You know, whether it's for healthcare or, you know, paying your taxes and things like that. But really, you know, limit what you share when you can, or at least understand the risk. It's just really challenging, you know, to for a consumer, because you don't know where your data is. You know, and even if you trust the company with whom you're sharing it, they may have a bunch of other service providers that they're using to host these things. And so with all these different kind of layers and interactions, it's really tough. I think the advice I love to give to younger people is never write something down if you don't want to see that printed out and shown to you by your principal or by your, you know, your HR department or even in court.
Tell me what you said again about bank data and text messages. I think that's some words to leave people with.
So just think about it, right? Think about your data and you know, there's different kinds of data. And I like to say there's some data that can kind of ruin your day and some that can potentially ruin your life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, no one wants to lose your credit card number. But, you know, imagine if somebody had access to, you know, things that you consider really personal, whether it's your text messages or photos or anything like that. And I think people just kind of forget, and oftentimes people are really too loose with what they share and how they protect it.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate your time as always. Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We'll take a break, come back, talk about vaccines and what's going on with developing them when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. All right, 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Mark Elaine Derry, a highly respected infectious disease specialist with extensive experience in public health and epidemiology. His expertise includes infectious diseases, emerging health threats, and preventative health measures. And I'd pretty well bet my salary that it's Dr. Derry, is it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm an infectious disease doctor as well.
I figured it was. Let's begin by explaining what mRNA vaccines are.
Yeah, so mRNA technology or mRNA vaccine technology has been something that has been around since the 1990s. That's when it first started to kind of become a scientific principle. And we really saw it accelerated during the COVID epidemic. It had already been working. They had already been working on coronaviruses because that was the easiest virus to be able to utilize. So some things happened that were just completely coincidental. They had the technology, and the technology had already, they already started working on coronaviruses 5 years before the outbreak. Mm-hmm. So when the outbreak happened, coincidentally with the same virus they'd been working on, all the pieces were in place. And the whole, and the magic and the beauty behind mRNA vaccines is that the vaccine consists of, regular non-mRNA vaccines consist of parts of a virus or parts of a bacteria. We refer to those as antigens. And that gets injected into your body, and your body sets up an immune response to those antigens. That's how vaccines work that are not mRNA-based. mRNA-based vaccines don't inject antigens. What we inject are these small pieces of mRNA which are genes, which we all of us have mRNA, message RNA, And what that does is that mRNA codes for a message, that's the M, to tell the immune system to make antibodies for whatever it is that's being coded for that vaccine.
A lot of us remember from biology, RNA and DNA. That's about all we remember is RNA and DNA. We don't remember exactly what all of that means. And the reason I say that, doctor, is some people, you know, they get themselves all worked up over what they don't really understand. What are some misconceptions when it comes to mRNA technology and vaccines that you'd like to address?
Misperceptions. Sure. I mean, let me just also just kind of answer the first question, which is DNA and RNA. Organisms, every organism on Earth is either an DNA. Most are DNA organisms, but some are RNA organisms, and that's viruses mostly. So DNA is what codes our genes. It's where our genes live. It's the DNA is basically the blueprint of humans or blade of grass or kitten or whatever it is, whatever life force there is. It is mostly run by DNA, but some organisms are RNA. And so the reason why the viruses are RNA viruses is that there's a lot of errors encoded in RNA, which works great for the viruses because they're constantly changing. So that's an evolutionary advantage for them. One of the things that my standard talking point when it comes to vaccines is this. Vaccines are like seatbelts. A seatbelt isn't going to prevent you from getting into a car accident. A vaccine isn't going to prevent you from getting the illness. A seatbelt mitigates the amount of damage that's done. It lessens that damage. If you're wearing a seatbelt in a car accident, everybody knows that you're less likely to push forward and hit the windshield or, you know, whatever. It just lessens the damage that a car accident can occur. Vaccines do the same thing. mRNA vaccines, particularly, we know mRNA vaccines saved millions and millions of lives around the world. And so all it does is it doesn't prevent you from getting the virus, in this case, the virus. What it does is it mitigates the amount of damage the virus could potentially do. And I think that's the most important thing that people need to recognize.
I think that's the best explanation I've heard in a long time. And as you say that, somebody texted in and said, I got the COVID shot, but I still got COVID. It was supposed to prevent the disease. And that's exactly what you just said is not the case.
Go ahead. Yeah, Tommy, let me address that really quickly. Mm-hmm. Let me address that really quickly. It's a very good point, and I want to address that. So the first vaccine against the first virus that we ended up referring to as the virus that emerged from Wuhan before it evolved into the Alpha virus, okay? Yes, it would have prevented that first it prevented you getting that first virus that emerged out of Wuhan. But like I just said, COVID is an RNA virus. And like I just said, RNA viruses evolve very rapidly. That's their superpower. Like HIV, like influenza, that's why we have to get vaccines all the time. And like alpha virus or beta virus. So that vaccine was good just for the Wuhan strain, but it prevented you from getting the Wuhan strain, but didn't prevent you from getting the alpha, beta, delta, you know, epsilon, all the other viruses afterwards. What it did at that point was like a seatbelt. It just mitigated the damage.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We'll specifically talk about RFK's defunding of mRNA vaccine research, which was touted as an accomplishment of the first Trump administration. I know last year we spoke to you about raw dairy. RFK talking about raw milk, 21 people sickened by it. He talked about the measles vaccine. He went to the funeral of two kids in Texas, then he backed himself up on that and said, no, get the measles vaccine. As we speak, somebody texted in and said, measles vaccines are 99% effective. This doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. Let me just say this. And doctor, you don't get involved in this. I'll handle this. Where in the world do you think, in what universe, that you know as much about this as our guest? I'd just like to know, really. In what universe do you think you know as much? And I'll read this man's credentials when we come back. 851, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. It is 8:57, 3 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Mark Allen Derry, a highly respected infectious disease specialist, American Osteopathic Board certified in internal medicine, American Osteopathic Board certified in infectious disease. His qualifications are there, believe me. So when it comes to the announcement by, and we all knew RFK Jr. was going to do this, he's saying that the COVID-19 vaccines were unsafe and effective. It helped drive the evolution of the virus and couldn't keep up with the new mutations. And as a result, he says the mRNA technology poses more risk than benefits against those respiratory viruses. Now, when it comes to opinions, you can have your own opinion. But when you come to science, you can't have your own opinion about science. Doctor, address that, please, if you will, and what happens now from here?
Yeah, I mean, just real quickly, it's you know, I think Mark Twain once said that disinformation can circle the earth six times before the truth can get up out of bed and put their pants on. Mm-hmm. So this is a long lasting battle, and we just have to fight it. And all we can do is just put the truth out there, and we just hope for the best. So that being said, I just want to bring your attention to some of the catastrophic failures that the administration is doing. Right now, the vaccine technology was working on three respiratory viruses. One was influenza, COVID-19, and the third one is the one that I want to focus on, which is avian bird flu. Mm-hmm. That's the H5N1 that has, around the globe, has a 50% mortality rate. Okay, let me just say that again. That's 50. Now, if there is a bird flu outbreak, I don't think that mortality is going to come down. There's been about 800 cases globally and 400 deaths. The majority of them have been of healthcare workers. So healthcare workers are particularly interested in this vaccine. So what we've seen are two deaths, one here in southwestern Louisiana, by the way. Let me just say, if you see a dead bird, please do not pick it up with your bare hands. If you need to pick up that dead bird, please use gloves, and please contact the state or look up how to dispose of that bird appropriately. We do have bird flu in southern Louisiana. This virus has the potential of being something that could spread and also be quite deadly. And the fact now that there our best weapon for that virus has been taken away from us is
thank you, Doc.